Chief Judge Baker, members of this honorable court, may it please the court. I am Captain Nicholas Carter. Myself, along with Colonel Patrick Wells, represent the appellate in this matter. The United States Air Force was not the proper victim of the larceny the appellate committed. Using her GPC card, her government purchase card, appellant did not receive anything from the United States Air Force. Larceny is a crime of possession. Appellant received gift cards from the possession of AFI's and Walgreens. They were the proper subjects of a credit card transaction, not the United States Air Force. A 2002 amendment to the Manual for Courts Martial makes this clear. It states, wrongfully engaging in credit, debit, or electronic transaction to obtain goods or money is an obtain-type larceny by false pretenses. Such use to obtain goods is usually a larceny of those goods from the merchant offering them.
Okay, counsel, didn't you stipulate that the Air Force bore the loss here?
I believe that there is a stipulation that DFAS paid.
Right. Okay, who's out the money?
Eventually, the United States Air Force.
The United States, the Treasury.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so Walmart, et cetera, are out nothing.
Yes, Your Honor.
And they were paid not as an act of grace by the government, but in the normal course of business, right?
The normal course of business, U.S. Bank paid.
Okay, so who's out the money? The United States.
Eventually, United
okay,
States.
Okay, so where does that leave you?
Well, where that leaves us is similar. If somebody steals a vehicle from me, and then I get paid that money from Geico or USA.
That's the collateral source rule. That's not the same thing here. This is the United States, the normal course of business, paying its obligations incurred by the appellant on behalf of the United States.
Well, yes, Your Honor, but as a crime of larceny, it's set up as a crime of possession. And what the appellant did was take the gift cards from these vendors. And then those vendors were paid by U.S. Bank. And then subsequent to that, the United States Air Force eventually paid those after approving those charges by the appellant. So, yes, the United States Air Force eventually lost money on it, and they may still have a civil liability suit or an ability to progress other channels to retrieve that money, but that does not make them the proper subject of the larceny. Similar to the United States versus Lubansky, where the vendors in that case would have been paid by the credit card company in that case, but as this court unanimously held, that it was a larceny by fraud upon the vendor.
Couldn't Lubowski also be read for the proposition that the victim was the person who suffered the loss?
Your Honor, I don't necessarily, the appellant doesn't necessarily read Lubowski in that situation. From what I remember of the opinion, it seemed like it was unclear who, if she had paid those or if she didn't.
She was not viewed as the victim because she didn't suffer the loss. Shouldn't we be looking for the person or the entity that suffers the loss as the victim of the larceny?
And Your Honor, I would go back to the elements of larceny as well as the common law elements of larceny. That larceny is a crime of possession. Now, understanding 121 is combining a number of difference of these crimes, and so the mode of how they receive this money becomes, there's more different ways to get that and still violate 121, but the possession, it still has to belong to a certain person. And in this case, the United States Air Force chose to charge it that it was property of the Air Force. What she made off with were gift cards from Walgreens and from AFI's, and those gift cards were paid by the United States, by U.S. Bank. And then U.S. Bank was eventually paid by DFAS, with money that was appropriated for the United States Air Force. Again, that means that, Walgreens or AFI's or U.S. Bank may be bad civil litigants because they've already been compensated by the United States Air Force. But that doesn't mean that the larceny was committed by taking anything from the possession of the United States. United States Air Force.
How do you answer the government's Anti-Deficiency Act argument?
Well, in essence, the argument that the government proposes in the Anti-Deficiency Act is that somebody's not able to create any obligations for money in advance of appropriations. Well, throughout the whole trial, the government was proposing that all of these things had already been appropriated. So these funds had already been appropriated. So I don't know how that's relevant.
Well, I think the government's saying it's an augmentation of appropriations under the Anti-Deficiency Act.
Well, I mean, even if some of these things maybe shouldn't be handled or shouldn't be handled in a certain way, what that does, it doesn't change the possession of the money. This is not a situation where, you know, the United States Air Force has an account at U.S. Bank, and U.S. Bank is taking that money directly out of the United States Air Force. You know, the possession of what Symbol Sharpton got was from the merchants, and that those are the proper subjects of the larceny. Similar with this court's, you know, holding United States versus Lubasky.
Must there only be one? Can there only be one victim in a larceny?
Given the language of the MCM, it seems that it recommends that it's the merchant. Now, given the holding in Lubasky, where they
though it also says alternate theories of charging are available.
Yes,
could one alternate theory be that there are multiple victims of a larceny?
And there could be multiple victims of larceny if there are certain possessory rights of the property. And that's where it comes down to. And in this case, the property used, the Air Force didn't have a possessory right. They compensated afterwards, but they didn't have a possessory right of the trespassing, taking, or the larceny by trick that the appellant engaged in when she used her GPC card in an unauthorized manner. The Air Force Court abused its discretion in multiple ways. The first one is that they erroneously distinguished Lubasky, which we've talked about briefly. Another one is that they stated that the appellant made no misrepresentations. In this argument that the Air Force Court put forward basically is inconsistent with prior holdings that the Air Force Court has. In essence, she did make misrepresentations. She represented to the different entities that she was authorized to make these purchases. She was authorized to get these gift cards when, in fact, she wasn't. Those were misrepresentations. And that was similar to the United States Air Force case of Schrager, which is a published case that we talk about in our brief. Another abuse of discretion that the United States Air Force engaged in, and that is that they engaged in, and they called this a debit card instead of a credit card. Now, as I had previously stated, if the United States Air Force had an account with U.S. Bank, and some of those were being drawn specifically out of the possessory interest of the Air Force, they would be the proper victim. But that's not the case in this case. What happened here is the U.S. Bank paid it. U.S. Bank billed the United States Air Force. The Air Force approved the charges by Symbol Sharpton, and then the Air Force paid those charges. Unlike in Lubasky, where the ATM and the debit transactions in that case took it directly from the account holder. That's not what happened in this case, and therefore that shows that there was not a possessory interest in the United States Air Force, and they can't be the proper victim of the larceny.
Can the government recoup this from the credit card company?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe they can.
How?
Because it was an unauthorized purchase, and the credit card company didn't.
What do they do? Go in and sue in district court?
They would have there would be different mechanisms, and I'm not exactly positive on how they would do that. But yeah, I mean, the credit card company would have to pay for authorized purchases, and they apparently paid for unauthorized purchases. They could also recoup from the merchants themselves as well, but none of that changes the possessory interest that the Air Force did not have in these funds when Symbol Sharpton, you know, committed her larceny.
So if my husband says I can use a credit card only to buy gas, mm-hmm. right, and I go out and I use it to buy clothes and shoes. Do you think that he can recoup that money from the credit card company?
There are certain mechanisms. I am not exactly sure how the credit accounts work in specific situations, but there are mechanisms. If somebody does an unauthorized use of a credit card, that they can be recouped. That they can be recouped from the credit card company as well as they can be recouped from the individuals. In short, the MCM dictates how these charges should be charged. The Air Force chose to charge it in a certain way. They appear to be choosing it and hoping to get an aggravating sentence of military property. So they chose against the Air Force. What they did not choose was to follow the MCM. They did not choose to follow this court's precedent in the United States versus Lubansky. And they did not choose to put on any evidence to show that this money was in the possession of the United States Air Force when the larceny by trick happened. And because of that, the proper victim in this case is not the United States Air Force. And unless there's any other further questions, that's all that I have.
I just have one question. You don't disagree that if the Air Force had known that she was going to exceed the use that they permitted of the card, that they wouldn't have given it to her, do you?
Well, yeah, I would disagree. If they knew that she was going to continue to exceed the use,
And part of getting a government credit card is that you agree to only use it for authorized purchases and not personal use?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, no further questions. Thank you, counsel. Counsel for the government, please.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, I'm Lieutenant Colonel Taylor Smith, and with Mr. Roger Bruce, we represent the government in this matter. Your Honors, the issue as framed by the appellant can't answer the fundamental question in this case, which is, if the Air Force is not the victim, as the appellant alleges, why is it that the Air Force is the only entity that lost any money? Before I get too deep into that, I think it's important that we take a look at how the proceedings at trial went. And to begin with, the appellant attempted to enter into a conditional guilty plea in order to preserve a motion to suppress statements that she had made to investigators. The government did not agree to this, and so the judge entered a not guilty plea on her behalf. The government then presented the evidence to support the specification. At no point did the defense, cross-examine witnesses. They object to evidence. They put on any evidence of their own. Even beyond that, the defense counsel conceded after the testimony of Mr. Bowles that the government property element of the specification had been satisfied by Mr. Bowles' testimony, and the appellant entered into a stipulation that DFAS had made payments. Then we went into closing argument where the appellant counsel stated that we attempted to plead guilty to the specification, so we're not going to spend any time on it. Into sentencing, where defense counsel stated the conduct was very bad. This is why she came in yesterday trying the only way she knew how to plead guilty and accept responsibility, even onto the clemency letter that was provided the convening authority by the appellant, where she says, I want you to consider that I tried to plead guilty, but the government prevented me from doing so. Your Honor, what we have in this case is a guilty plea in form, if not in actual name. And I think this is important because I think the actual issue we're dealing with here is not an issue of legal sufficiency, but one of factual sufficiency. And an issue of factual sufficiency is, in fact, waived by a guilty plea. Even beyond that, even if the court doesn't find that this is a factual sufficiency review.
Well, counsel, if that was a factual sufficiency review, we wouldn't be here. We can't do that.
No, ma'am, I agree with that. I think that this has been phrased as a legal sufficiency issue in order to have this court take review, and I think this is an opportunity for the court.
Well, we have discretion to take cases or not cases when the petitioner sends them, right?
Yes, ma'am.
So do you think we're smart enough to see through that?
No, I do understand that, Your Honor, but I think the point that I'm making here is that this is an opportunity for the court to draw a distinction between what I guess to use a technical term, is the squishiness between legal and factual sufficiency. In many ways, they overlap, and I think this is a chance for the court to explain what that distinction is. But regardless of how we approach this, it's nevertheless true that the government was correct in alleging that the Air Force was the victim in this crime. And we can see that when we look at the basic facts of this case.
Can there be more than one victim?
I believe so, Your Honor. Okay. Absolutely.
And how do you know when you have a victim?
Well, I think the standard of who actually lost the superior possessory interest is pointed out in Lebaski, and I think that could fall across multiple parties, but in this case, I think there really was only one victim, and it was the United States Air Force, although the possibility of more can exist. And I believe that the Air Force is the sole victim in this case, because when you look at what the facts were presented at trial, it shows that the appellant was duly appointed as a cardholder for a government purchase card. In her appointment letter, which you'll find, there are two of them, you'll find her prosecution exhibit 5 and 6, they say that as a cardholder, she was authorized to purchase medical and non-medical goods, which is sort of a long-winded way of saying she could purchase whatever she wanted to purchase as long as it was for the benefit of the government. Appellant then took that authority, made her purchases somewhere north of $20,000 worth of purchases, and then converted that property to her own use. In so doing, she has violated what became the Air Force's superior possessory interest in these goods. The case United States versus Lebaski, which appellant relies on, doesn't indicate anything different. And as this court's well aware, in Lebaski, what we have is an accused as a casualty assistance officer helping an elderly woman named Mary Shirley. And this court analyzed his crimes down first the credit card theft and also a debit card theft. On the credit card side, what this court found was that Mary Shirley was not the victim because nothing of value was obtained from her. And I think, even though, as appellant's counsel pointed out, the facts don't specifically lay out why that was the case, I think it's fair to assume, as the case points out, that Mary Shirley was notified by the fraud branch of these charges. And when a transaction is flagged as a fraud, Shirley's not going to pay on it, and the bank's not going to pay on it. It's going to be the merchant who is out the goods at that point.
Just to be clear, the property in question here is the cash that the Air Force transferred to the bank?
Well, I think we can look at it in two ways. We need to decide, first of all, whether this is more akin to a credit card or a debit card.
How was it presented at trial?
It was presented more along the lines of a credit card, is how I read it. And the reason for that is that what was dealt with at trial was the issue of the gift cards themselves as a good. And when we look at the charging preferences in Article 121,
just to be clear, did they say, did the government say that what was, I'm sorry, out of root, no. Did they, what they say was that the, that what was stolen was the gift cards, or what was stolen was the money?
I believe, in the specification, it's alleged as the money, but it was never, I can't say that it was specifically laid out at trial what theory the government was actually proceeding under. But in either case,
well, the gift cards have no intrinsic value.
Yes, sir.
They're just
no.
little pieces of plastic.
No, that's correct.
So it has to be something else.
Yes, sir. It would be the value of the gift card itself that put this over the $20,000.
Counsel, in your brief, you note that the Air Force is prohibited from entering into a traditional credit card agreement with U.S. Bank. What was the specific contractual agreement between the government and the U.S. Bank, and where in the record do we find that authority?
The contract was never entered into evidence, so the contract itself between U.S. Bank is not presented.
How do we know what it says, then?
Well, sir, my point in making that, and my references to the Anti-Deficiency Act, were simply that agencies of the United States government can only spend the money that is apportioned to them by Congress. A traditional credit card account dealing transaction is credit. You are taking out credit.
But I mean, my impression was, and the record really, I don't think, explains this. My impression was that the government has appropriated funds for these expenditures prior to the expenditures being made. It's not a supplemental expenditure that's made. It's made when the card is used to charge something, whether appropriately or inappropriately.
Yes, sir. No, I agree, and that's my impression also. My point, though, is that if the government is engaging in credit transactions, for example, if she had run this credit card on September 30th, and then the bill had not come due until after the fiscal year, that would have been a credit account that had carried over to the new appropriation, which would have violated.
Is that, in fact, the case here? Or what are the dates of the charges?
No, sir, the point is that because in order to prevent those types of events from occurring, the government does not enter into credit card accounts at all, which is also why there's things like the Prompt Payments Act, which is why the government does not carry over into the next appropriation. Along those lines, too, the judge did take judicial notice of AFI 64-117, which says in it that one of the things that has to be done on the government purchase card is prompt payment, and that if there are delinquencies in payment, the paying officer or official can be held accountable for disciplinary action.
Well, is there any indication in this record, because I've had some experience with fiscal law.
Yes, sir.
Is there any indication in this record that this wasn't paid with current appropriations?
No, sir.
So there's no Anti-Deficiency Act problem, and there's no augmentation of appropriations, and the government's charging off in a different direction. If you've got a problem, it's a purpose problem. It's a 1301 problem because or did she? Because you're saying she was authorized to purchase other than medical goods, so maybe you don't have a purpose problem.
Yes, sir. And no, you're absolutely right, and that would be the analysis had the government alleged an Anti-Deficiency Act violation. My purpose in bringing this to the court's attention is simply that the government can't run credit transactions.
Well, people extend credit to the government every day. Vendors extend credit to the government all the time. The government engages in credit transactions constantly. The Bureau of the Public Debt is borrowing money every second.
Yes,
so
sir.
Where does that leave us? You've got time, you've got purpose, and you've got amount. Those are the three criteria of a probes law.
Yes, sir.
We don't have a time problem. We don't have an amount problem. And now it appears we don't have a purpose problem.
Well,
so what's the purpose of this argument?
Simply to show that the government, when the appellant made those charges, the government had an obligation to pay them. That's the entire purpose of that argument.
Okay. Well, I think the appellant stipulated to that.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Well, I not as clearly as that. Just to be honest, she stipulated that DFAS did make the payments.
Okay.
My argument is that DFAS had no choice but to make those payments.
All right, although we don't have the contract in the record.
Correct. Yes, okay. Sir. Yes. But when we look, to draw back to the case of United States versus Lubaski, when we're dealing with the issue of whether this is more akin to a credit card, the court pointed to the analysis 121 and pointed out that the analysis there, the preferences in charging a victim, are preferences. That's not an ironclad rule, and alternative charging theories always exist so long as the facts can support it. When we look at that analysis and we look at the cases that are cited within that analysis, it leads us to the case of United States versus Christie, which I think is instructive in this case. In United States versus Christie, what we had was a service member of the Marine Corps who was given a government credit card for the purpose of purchasing gasoline. He used that government credit card to purchase gasoline, but he put that gasoline in his own car. The Navy Marine Corps, in analyzing that, said that what has happened here is that the accused in Christie was acting as an agent of the United States government. Anything he purchased while acting as an agent became the property of the United States, and he held these goods in trust for the use of the United States. When he put that gasoline in his own car, he violated the government's superior possessory interest in that gasoline and converted it to his own use. Likewise, we have a similar situation here. The appellant in this case was properly appointed and properly held a government purchase card. She had no limits on what she could actually buy under the terms of prosecution exhibits 5 and 6, and when she purchased things, anything she purchased was actually the property of the United States Air Force. When she took those things, converted them to her own use, she violated the government's superior possessory interest. That's if we deal with this case as a credit card. Likewise, the Baskey dealt with the question of debit cards. And in analyzing the debit card, this court found that they now hold Ms. Christopher, if not Ms. Christie, Ms. Shirley was actually the victim. Because he accused him Lubasky over a fiduciary duty, and that he gained access to her accounts through false pretenses, basically by agreeing that he would only use that account to benefit Ms. Shirley. Again, that is similar to what we have in this case. The appellant was appointed in 26 April of 2010. And as part of that appointment, and as part of her training, as we see in AFI 64-117, she knew that things she purchased was to be purchased only for the use of the government. She began her larcenies on 1 June of 2010, so almost immediately after being appointed, which fits within the same timeline that existed in Lubasky, where the accused in that case was given access to the accounts in December of 98, and his fraudulent transactions began in June of 99. By violating the agreement, by violating this agency or fiduciary duty to purchase things only for the United States Air Force, just as the accused in Lubasky violated his fiduciary duty and committed larceny by false pretenses, so did appellant in this case. Your Honors, I think one thing, the case that was quickly mentioned by appellant of United States versus Schaffer, I just want to comment on extremely briefly and point out that that was a case that dealt with a government travel card. This is a government purchase card. For the government purchase card, the account holder is essentially the United States Air Force. For a government travel card, as the Air Force Court went to pains to point out, the agreement is between an individual and the bank. The military or the government is never a party to that, and the accused in Schaffer had no authority to bind the government in the way that the appellant was given the authority to bind the United States Air Force in this case. Essentially, Your Honor, Schaffer does not apply to this case. It's completely irrelevant. Likewise, I point out that the other case relied on by appellant, United States versus Franchino, does not apply, simply for the fact that Franchino is a Coast Guard member who pled guilty to using a government credit card to steal funds from the United States Coast Guard, or United States government. In invalidating that guilty plea, the only main reason that plea was invalidated was because it was found that the Providency inquiry did not reveal the taking, i.e. that the Coast Guard ever made payment on the charges made by the accused in that case. The question of whether the government was properly alleged as the victim was never raised. So again, it just simply does not apply to this case. Your Honors, appellant's crimes resulted in the Air Force being bound to spend money on goods that were purchased by the appellant. The merchants were paid, the bank has not got any money. The only entity that lost money in this case is the United States Air Force. There's no need to make this charging decision as difficult as the appellant would have us make it.
Can I just ask a question in the abstract? If the government Air Force had paid back the bank $10,000, could they have charged two larcenies?
I believe they could. Yes. Well, I love questions in the abstract. They certainly could have charged the Air Force. I think the question of whether they could have charged the bank, I think, would be the second victim in that case, assuming that the bank made the payment. So
they could have made two crimes out of one act.
Well, I
doubled the exposure.
No, sir.
When the dispute's really between the bank and the Air Force as to who owes who what.
No, I think the way that they would charge them in that case is instead of charging this one specification that covers it all, I think they would have to break it out into individual transactions and say the bank was reimbursed for these but was not for these. So the government would be the victim in one half and the bank in the other.
So you'd have multiple larcenies there.
Yes, sir, correct. So, no, I don't think it would be one.
Would you have to get into all the superior possessory interest stuff?
I don't think we need to go that far. I think we can just make this as simple as...
No, in the abstract thing.
Oh, in the abstract?
I mean, aren't we just looking for a victim? Why do we have to figure out who the superior possessory interest is?
It's just there are numerous theories that we can approach, and each one of them supports the appellant being guilty in this case for the correct...
No, I get that part of the government's argument.
Yes, sir.
The government wins on all theories, I get it. But which is the correct theory if we're trying to write an opinion about how to make this less complicated than it seems to be, since we have these cases come up all the time.
Yes, sir.
And what is the ultimate essence of what should be proven? Because I'm looking around and I don't see in the elements this stuff about superior possessory interest, and it gives me trauma to think about law school. And we're all talking about who's the victim.
Yes, sir.
And somebody else is talking about who has the property. What's the essential test for you know, boil it down rather than there are eight theories and we win on all.
Yes, sir.
What is the correct theory of law that we should be applying?
The correct theory is who bears the loss. I think it's as simple as that.
And the problem with Lebowski was that they didn't get anything from her and she didn't suffer any loss.
Absolutely, ma'am. That's correct. Barring any further questions, Your Honors, that concludes my remarks.
I thank you, counsel. The counsel for the appellant will now have the opportunity for a rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of...
Can you answer that same question?
Yes.
There's lots of different theories floating around. What's the essence of larceny, and what should we be looking for if we're trying to say in plain English to a normal person what larceny is all about? What should we be looking for?
Well, I think larceny can go back to the elements that they have, that the appellant wrongfully took, obtained, and withheld certain property from the possession of the owner or another person. The property belonged to a certain person, the property was of a certain value, and the taking, obtaining, withholding was with the intent to permanently deprive. Nothing about who bears the losses within that. The MCM made this clear by stating when there's a credit card transaction, it is a larceny by trick against the merchant.
Usually,
yes, Your Honor. It does say usually, you know, but I think this is clear, and I think that's how you, when you're looking at, you know, the crimes, you're looking at that first element is it's got to be in the possession of somebody. And the fact that the United States Air Force, after the fact, compensated for it doesn't change the fact that it was a larceny at the time of when she...
But the way the specification is written, isn't the first element the fact that the Air Force had $20,000? The property in question is the $20,000, not the gift card and not the lawn furniture that was bought with the gift card.
Yes, Your Honor.
Do you agree with that or not?
Well, yeah, the Air Force had $20,000.
Which it now doesn't.
But isn't that what, that's the whole, the problem with this case that makes it confusing is gift cards are brought in and weird things are purchased and people talk about possessory interests, but when the day is done, element one is the Air Force had $20,000, and by the time you get to element four, they don't have that $20,000 anymore.
But what had happened between elements one and elements four is that the United States Air Force chose to approve these purchases, which they did not have to, and the United States Air Force chose to pay for these purchases, which they did not have to.
How do we know that?
The record that they didn't have to pay.
The record's somewhat sound on that, but the United States government in their brief said, well, the government is not necessarily bound by the actions of its agents who exceeds their contracting authority, you know, but at the end of the day, the United States Air Force aren't bound by these transactions. They didn't have to. The Staff Sergeant Sago, which is her testimony is on Joint Appendix 38 through 46, talks about how she saw these charges. It had concern. She let it go. She saw it again, and she let it go. And the third time, she decided to say something about it. The United States Air Force didn't do anything about it.
How do we know that? How do we know whether the Air Force, or ultimately DFAT, the Treasury, is bound to pay this or not? We don't have the contract.
We don't have the contract.
We don't have the contract. And they paid them in the normal course of business. I think that's no one challenged my assertion that it wasn't as an act of grace. So, you know, we don't know that.
You're right, but I think that goes to the government's burden of having to prove that each of the, at trial, they have to prove that each of these elements were met. And as part
well,
of that,
no, but if you simply go on the principle that the Air Force had $20,000, now it doesn't, and the loss fell on the Air Force. And what you're saying, I thought what you were suggesting was that the Air Force screwed up and didn't have to do this, and we don't know that.
Well, to a point, Your Honor, I think that the Air Force did not have to do this.
Well, you may think that, but I don't know.
Could you just tell me succinctly why, what you think your best argument is as to why the evidence is not legally sufficient, okay, for the larceny offense?
Well, based on, in Lubaski, simply, Your Honor, yes, that the United States Air Force did not have the gift cards and they did not pay for the gift cards. The gift cards were paid by U.S. Bank, and the gift cards were in the possession of Walgreens and AFI's. And she made out with those gift cards and with
the money. But that's not a legal theory. That's a factual explanation. What is the legal theory that you're relying on?
That those two things are not in the possession. Were not in the possession of the United States Air Force. And larceny is a crime of possession.
They weren't military property in the possession of the Air Force.
No, Your Honor.
That's your argument. Yeah, yeah. You said you had a couple of things you wanted to say, but we never got let you say them. Do you want to say them quickly?
I have about 5 seconds, Your Honor, if you don't mind. Basically,
ready, go. Okay.
Basically, Your Honor, Judge Ryan, you mentioned some questions about, you know, it sounded like a dereliction of duty. They didn't charge her with dereliction of duty. They could have charged her with dereliction of duty, and they chose not to. They chose not to do that. I talked about that. And then, if you look at the government's theory, there are questions about what the government's theory at trial was. Joint Appendix 72, basically he gives his theory, the trial counsel gives his theory. He gives the credit that these were credit cards, not debit cards or any other violations. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The court thanks both counsel. The case is now submitted, and we stand in recess until further order of the court.
Court stands adjourned until further order of the court.